Okay. Just one second. Yeah, looking at the cosmos here, I'm sitting here looking at the night and day sky in India 5,000 years ago, rotating, and just trying to apply, I mean, I'm using this stellarium. If you sit and you look up into the east, which people apparently consider the main cardinal direction, then you will see, if you would, in your imagination or in a computer simulation like this, add the lines of the longitudinal latitudes of the sky and see how it rotates around the pole, which is not a star but a point around which it all appears to rotate. Well, then you have the ecliptic coming there almost vertically as a wheel rotating with signs, constellations that tell stories. And the sun is there, is the path of the sun and the other planets. Now, it is said in the Bhagavatam that the pole, the Dhruva, is in the, is that star there, whatever it's called, in the tail of that dolphin Shishumara. And yes, it used to be that around 5,000 years ago, that star, but I heard from an astrologer that they didn't consider this star as such as pole, but the point there, Dhruva, is the point which it all rotates around. Now, if we look like this, sitting, looking just the way our eyes see it, with no interpretation, that's how it all looks. The whole dome there of the sky is rotating on a daily and nightly basis, 360 degrees. So, therefore, one could describe the whole cosmos or the planets and the stars and all of that as rotating around us. That's completely okay thing to do. It doesn't mean that we are geocentric. It just means we describe it like that, the way we see it. And then you can continue and put the philosophy, the knowledge of the Bhagavatam into this, Puranas, And you would have Meru being the axis around this, which this rotation takes place. Because that's exactly how it is described in the Bhagavatam. As far as I understand, I can check that closer. But I definitely think that the rotation of, or the alignment there of Meru and Dhruva Loka is on the same axis. Anyway, provided it is so, then we can continue here. Now, one interesting thing with that as a parenthesis is that I have the one case I'm making here about the astronomy in the Bhagavatam, which I mean is very briefly described and mainly just to explain how we can see God in everything, see Krishna in everything. And the description there given of different the movements of the heavenly bodies, I mean the sun and the moon and so on, that is given there in the Bhagavatam is given in their apparent movement across the sky as we see them, and their movements along the ecliptic, the zodiac, and there you go into the astrology concept or understanding. And this, when you look at the dome up there rotating around the Dhruva, the pole, and imagine the Meru axis, Axis Mundi, Meru, forget about its specific shape right now, but just think of it in principle, then things start to fall into place, at least as it seems to me so far, because, well, what I see here is that then this rotation is going on along the equator, because that's what our equator is, right? It's the it's just aligned with that rotation along the axis, right, of the Earth. So if Meru is the axis, or in the axis somehow, then the equator would be Loka mountain in principle, or be located where that mountain is described to be, or be that plane. That would represent Bhumandala or something like that. I'm just placing elements in here in the sky, I mean in the special relationship, so to speak, that they are described there in the Bhagavatam. Because it fits, I mean, we got the rotation of the whole thing there and the Meru and the central mountain and the axis there, and a plane, as it seems, where things are going on. And what is going on at this plane, as I'm looking now, well, I mean, a story is being told there, because I've turned on this view of the signs, the constellations, and first of all, in India, there are not so many, at least not in this piece of software I'm looking at here. We'll have to check that out, because the main constellations are going on there along the ecliptic. Which is, well, I mean, fairly close to the equator, and so they're coming that direction. Like that. So somebody, a Vedic astrologer, said that the lokas that are described in the Bhagavatam are, how was it he said, nominally represented there in the stars. And I was trying to understand what he meant, and that's why I'm sitting here right now. But if I would just again take that statement and place the lokas into what I'm seeing here, they would then be strictly speaking, they would be represented by seven sectors of that sphere that we are seeing out there, rotating towards the north, and seven sectors towards the south. Those would represent the lokas and the talas, actually. Now, if the stars and the constellations and the names and the stories included in those up there in the sky somehow or other reflect that, that would be an interesting thing. I mean, it would be incredible. I don't have high hopes for that, but we should also think of the fact that, be aware of the fact that many of these stories or metaphors or allegories or whatever symbolism we find up there in this among the stars from ancient civilizations, I mean, including the actual signs of the star constellations, why they are called the way they are, that why they are drawn the way they are, depicted as mythological beings, why those specific mythological beings are drawn into that specific set of stars and so on. There are stories there, of course, that are being told up in the sky, and they're different in different cultures. And since we're now looking at the Indian one, it may be possible, and I think actually it is so that the story as it goes up, of course it is actually, because Dhruva is residing up there on Satyaloka, which is the highest point of the cosmos, right? And yeah, and so on. So I guess the other things should also be there. And these stories would somehow or other fit the structure of the cosmos as described there in the Bhagavatam with the seven lokas and seven talas. I don't know, but it's quite possible. And maybe in the past, it was in a more developed way that made much more sense, that you could see the connection. But maybe then that connection was lost. And maybe only the Dhruvaloka thing remains. Or it is there in the Puranas, but still remains to be seen. Or discovered again. So that's an interesting possibility, at least, which of course is speculative, but not really, because I'm just looking faithfully here at what I am told to look at. And all I'm doing here is to start from that point of looking at the world just from where I am. Not trying to sit down and imagine the solar system seen from outside, as we tend to do in the modern Western form of astronomy and cosmology even. But just like this. And thinking about what that astrologer said, that the stars are nominal representations of the lokas. I mean, I'm not exactly sure about the proper understanding of the word nominal in this connection, but I would believe that it has something to do with symbolic which would then mean of this physical world. I'm not going here and just take it for what it is. I'm trying, I'm testing, I'm... Yeah. Of this physical world, seeing from this perspective which I'm looking at now, contains in a way an image, or that image have been conveniently and ingeniously painted there in the sky in the form of all these constellations and so on. You know, as one would build a temple or classical traditional temple that represents the cosmos, actually, with a dome, and they could build pictures there and symbols, but they did that up in the sky instead. Well, it could be that. And or simply another part of the macro microcosm alignment. In other words, this mirror I'm seeing there is the axis around which the sky appears to rotate from where I'm looking now, okay? And even if we look, whether we look at it heliocentric or geocentric or whatever, it doesn't matter, because we can just call it that, a rotation. We can call it the rotation of the sun around the plane of the ecliptic on a yearly basis and on a daily and nightly basis as it appears to us, right? And of course, that rotation is there. It's a rotation of planets around the sun. It's a rotation of the Earth planet. It's the rotation of, or orbiting, maybe we should say, of the sun around the center of the galaxy. And as far as I heard, the sun also rotates, or at least its magnetic field. That's another thing. So there is rotation, and to us this is how it appears. And that therefore is natural to describe it that way, as it is done in the Bhagavatam, as the Sishumara. And that rotation around that axis. So that's the could we say that this that is the Bu level, the Bu Loka. In other words, the physical world that we are in now. the world of the Mahabhutas that we call the elements of matter. In other words, the forms that appear on the senses of our Mahabhuta bodies and that we are now looking out through. And then we see that space. Now, that axis and or alignment that we see this space have, as seen from our eyes, but in any case, the rotation going on, is of course to our eyes in this world limited to as it happens in this world. And this bu loka. Think of loka not as a planet but as a location. So we look out through these eyes and we see the space out there, and we can divide that up and study it and see this, what I'm talking about now. If we look somewhere else, if we move away from this physical body and are qualified to do so, we can look into a higher space, a higher loka, which means that we leave this loka, bu. We don't look out through these eyes anymore, and hear through these ears and so on. Our senses look somewhere else, go somewhere else. And of course, that's how we have it described there. The yogis, they can travel between the worlds, between the different lokas, through inner space. Which is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and is called Antaryami. Prabhupada describes how a yogi travels through inner space. And then, in other words, out or in from behind these senses, inner meaning then not inside this body as we materialists may think, materially contaminated souls, thinking that the soul is inside the body, locked in there somewhere, but beyond and in the sense that it is closer to God, closer to the center of the entire existence. We have the Bahiranga and the Antaranga, right? So and we have the same thing, the shamans do that same. They travel along the axis, the world pillar, the world mountain, the axis mundi, the world tree, and can then go to different worlds. That's the art they learn. And they do it to communicate with beings there and get help from ancestors or even the ancestors of animals, as it seems, or different divine beings like that. In other words, more powerful beings. So they are the connection between the, you could say, the earthly realm, the Bhurloka, with the higher realms, or lower for that sake too. I don't know. I mean, talk about the underworld and all that, which remains for me to understand. But so then, when you are, let's say, in the higher, next high loka, which is described as Bhuvar loka, which contains, as it is described in the Bhagavatam, Pitri loka and Preta loka, I think, which refers to, Pitris refers to the ancestors or parents and grandmother and father and all of those that we find reported over and over again from those who have near-death experiences, that they actually meet, they leave this body, the physical body, and they don't lose consciousness or lose the power of the senses. They still have their senses, but they find themselves in a completely different world, a much more beautiful world, which seems quite evident then from their descriptions that this is the place you go when you die from here, when you leave this place. And sometimes it is described, and it's quite consistently described even by mediums who say that they get contact with other worlds, and I think more reliably those people who have these near-death experiences, but also, as we find in these old wisdom texts and all of that, it's very, I mean, it really fits from all directions there. So, and in the Bhagavatam we find that you've got the ancestors, they're living in a realm just close to this Bhurloka, this earthly physical realm, and they help us here. And it's quite natural, actually, that parents who pass away, they want to continue helping their children through their lives. I would, if I passed away, and I want to hang, some or other, not hanging around here necessarily, but be able to act into here to help my children through their lives. Guidance or whatever. And there you get into the, well, that's also pretty universal. You have the idea of, in Christianity, of angels that are around helping people, especially children. And in the East, and most, I think, older cultures, even the Samis here, the original people here, they have as natural in their culture this the worship and the, of the ancestors and the rituals, whatever, to come in contact with and get guidance from, I guess, the ancestors. It's there all over the world. So they reside in Bhuvar Loka. Pitriloka, and then Preta Loka. Sometimes some people interpret that Sanskrit word to mean ghosts, but it really just means the people who are deceased, who have left this world. So ancestors or not, I guess. But in any case, this is all described there explicitly in the Bhagavatam to be what Bhuvar Loka is, and it is then kind of between earth and heaven. And as the near-death people, experienced people also often describe, it is a kind of a in-between world where you go and you stay there for a while until you're ready to go further to your location. And in the case of parents of children on earth, it may of course then be that they stay there until their children, come. And then they take over and watch their children or something, and then they can go further. And that's really how they describe it. And I guess it's described like that all over the world. Those who are keen on maintaining their relationships to their ancestors. And I just read in a book about the people of the north here in the old days, I mean the Samis and their ancestors and their relatives, because that kind of ethnic group spreads quite far to the east from here, that when a family member passed away, they didn't call it pass away. In other words, they didn't think of that person as having left them and gone somewhere else, but just to have gone over to the invisible world, to the other side where you cannot see them, but they're still around with you. And therefore you still have a relationship to them. And that's why in India, for instance, they have these pinda ceremonies that you do regularly for the ancestors. You offer them something. In China too, I was actually attending such a ceremony myself. They go to the what do you call them? Farmatories, anyway, the graveyards, and they make some little ceremony of sacrifice and offerings to these ancestors, a grandfather and grandmother there. And I spoke to the Chinese people, and do you really consider that you have a relationship to them still like this? Or why are you doing this offering? And they said, yes, they have this. Maybe they just have it by a tradition and they don't believe it, but it's there still as a tradition. So then that is the next loka upwards, and beyond that you have Svarga, which is really heaven. It's just, which is in turn, they're all divided into several. In other words, all kinds of places you can go for your higher and more permanent destination or whatever, depending on your mode of nature, your guna. So again, this is, now we get back to this model of this rotation on the axis and the lokas distributed up there. But now in another dimension, so to speak, in a higher dimension where each one of those represent a different realm, a location, a world to live in, just as we are in one that we call the material or the physical world now. But the alignment around a center axis that the world is, you could say, centered around or rotating around, or you find that rotation then all the way up. And the axis itself is leading up to liberation. And then you find, and then you find in us, individual people, that same axis represented by the spinal column, which is called Merudanda in Sanskrit, where you have the same thing with seven chakras. Now, what is a chakra? It can also be seen as a mandala, and when we talk about Bhu mandala, for instance, they actually do describe different, depending on what you, how you want to see them. Some people think maybe they are little funny symbols in there, but they more describe levels of a consciousness like that, which then are also represented there in the body itself. So you see, it's micro, macrocosm in different levels. The same principle is there. And that principle is embodied, you could say, or or described or mapped out in different ways, and one of those you can see there in the sky, in the stars and the planets and that rotation there. So you can see it however you want, that people, the ancients, they drew all this there in the sky to tell us a story, to tell us the wisdom of the, you know, actual cosmology, of the actual creation, what's going on here in this, what we call the cosmos. And but then also telling us that there are worlds beyond this world. So it's all very complete. So I'm still thinking, yeah, why not, that the lokas are there, drawn in the stars. And you say, you know, the seven sages, they reside there, and the others reside there. It's a map, and then you can take that map and draw it two dimension, three, you know, illusion of three dimension on a two dimensional paper, just with a pen or something, and then you would have pretty much this model that the ancient cosmologies gave. And it's important then to remember that it is indeed describing a multiverse consisting of three worlds. And that's why this Sami lady said that the first thing I met her, there are three worlds. And the whole cosmos, all of those worlds, the whole everything, it's alive, it's about life. The whole cosmos is alive. And you go to India and they say the same. This whole cosmos is just the body of God, the Purusha. Just as we have our body. It's quite amazing. So now, turning back to the Bhagavatam, many questions still, of course. What are those islands there, the dvipas, and what's the Loka mountain and all of that? That will remain to be seen.